Welcome to the Operation Move podcast. My name is Zoe, and I'm not quite sure what day of Groundhog Day we're up to. Ages ago, I listened to a TED Talk. I think I watched it. And one of the main points that was made was that there is no harder, there's just hard. And I think that there's been a lot of that going around lately for everyone. And I think really like the reason why I haven't been podcasting regularly is the same reason why people struggle to sort of get into a running habit regularly, is that like I thought that it needed to be a certain length, or I thought that I needed a certain amount of time, or I thought I needed the right person to talk to, or any of those other things that you sort of, we put this sort of like minimum on what it has to be, and then it ends up being nothing. Anyway, as I was getting ready for my long run yesterday, and was looking for new podcasts to listen to because I'd sort of run out of things in my queue. And I came across this podcast where it was pretty much daily episodes, but they were all really short, you know, like 5-10 minutes, that sort of thing. Like a bit of a brainwave. It's like, I could definitely do that. Even this morning, I bought a new computer because my computer was like 7 years old. But as with most new computers, like a lot of the connections are different. So my normal microphone that I would use won't plug into the new computer without an adapter. And even with that, I was like, oh, you know, like the audio is not going to be very good. I'm like, no, you're doing it again. So anyway, for today, I thought that I would just do a quick thing on three of the typical running questions that usually, when I'm listening to podcasts, I hear them get butchered in a big way. And some of them might, well, the first one I see is often like people talk about banking time in the marathon, which what that means is going out faster in the first half than the second half. And I can see logically where this comes from. The idea is that everyone knows that you slow down in the second half. You know, everyone knows that it gets harder. So the idea of doing a bit more when you feel fresh kind of makes sense. But what it ignores is that those two things are directly related. So you know, I'm not sure exactly what the numbers are on this, but there's a bit of a common saying in running circles that every 10 seconds you go out too hard in the first half, you're going to lose about a minute. Like every 10 seconds per kilometer that you go out too aggressively in the first half, you're going to lose about a minute in the second half. And it's not like that far off. So, and it's really hard to judge the first half because it can feel kind of okay for a period of time. But if I think about one of the ones where the second half went really pear-shaped for me, I got through the first half in about, I would say, a bit under an hour and 55 minutes. Maybe it was an hour and 53 minutes. And I ended up finishing in about 4:08. So I lost 13 minutes in the second half. And so I haven't actually sort of done the math on like how much I think that I went out too hard in the first half, but I don't think it was by much. I reckon that if I had just been, you know, like a couple of minutes slower, like more like coming in about like 158, 159, completely different race. And so that's what people are talking about when say do not bank time, because if you go out conservatively, the energy will be there in the second half. So where, as opposed to, you know, like my best pace marathon where it was pretty much even the whole way, and the effort level dramatically increased in the last 3Ks. But that was a good time for that to happen because you're like, well, you can get through 3Ks and sort of like hold on to the pace. But yeah, they're very, those two things are very connected. So you, it takes a lot of trust to know that you can go out at what feels like almost too slow pace, and that if it's there on the day, it will be there when you get to that second half. So that's number one thing that I think I hear people ask about, and then I cringe at the answer. Do not bank time. There's almost nothing where you bank time in distance running. You can, like, obviously some things favor a slight negative split, like when you go to a shorter distance, like a half, it does. But with 10Ks and 5Ks, like, probably not, you know, like it's such a short amount of time. You don't really have time to kind of, to sort of like go out conservatively and then pick it up in the back end, because you've got to be pretty consistent the whole way. So I would say that the, like, the half is probably the only thing where that negative split really pays off. With marathons, you'll often end up with like a slight positive split, but like even pacing is usually a sign of a really well-run marathon. And you know, yeah, like the only time that you're sort of having a much like faster beginning and then holding on is like sort of like middle distance, really. Anyway, so the next thing that I get seen asked quite a lot is about fueling, and I think that there's a lot of misinformation about that too, because it is true that when you're running, your digestive system is downregulated. So eating and running can take a lot of work, and I think everyone pretty much understands that you're better off being fueled up for a performance or for something where you really want to peak for. But often it's sort of misunderstood in terms of people thinking, well, if I never do it, and then I, or like, not never do it, but if I occasionally practice it, but mostly don't use it, and then do it on race day, then it's going to give me a much bigger boost. But the reality is all of that training is you're teaching your body what to do with that. So it's not going to be sufficient to do it once or twice and figure out, yep, like, this isn't upsetting my stomach. That's not going to get the job done. So, and people vastly underestimate how much they need to. So, you know, like for something under an hour, you know, 30, 40 grams of carbs, fine. For, you know, an hour to 2 hours, you probably want to be more on the side of 50 grams of carbs per hour. And for 2 to 3 hours, that's when you start getting into your more like your 80 grams of carbs per hour. And beyond that, it's like that plus whatever else you can take on. And it's also important to know that you're talking about the macronutrient, not the actual weight of the food. So even in something that you think of as pure carbs, like say, for example, if I get, you know, like, what would it be? Like, often I'll use at the moment dried mango because it's easy for long runs. Yeah, I wouldn't use it for, races because it'd be a bit cumbersome to eat, but I do for training because it doesn't matter if I'm like walk for a bit to have something to eat. And so, you know, like 100 grams of that dried mango is only going to give me 60 grams of carbs. And that's probably one of like the more sort of pure sources, because you've got like the dried fruit and then you've got like usually sort of like the sugar that it's they've got on it as well. And so, you know, it's probably the more whole and less processed the food is, the more that discrepancy is. So, you know, you'll have like 100 gram apple with 20 grams of carbs, that kind of thing. So that's what you need to think about too, is that you're not like looking at the weight of the food, you're looking at the actual macro that you're getting in. And it's a lot. So, you know, on a race day, I would tend to have, you know, like a full, like a nice big bowl of porridge with maple syrup. And then I'd have like a coffee with whole milk in it. And then I would have, like, I have some carb powder at home. You can just get that from, like any kind of like bulk or whole foods place that sell dextrose. It's probably cheaper than buying it through like a supplement shop. And I would tend to have, like, probably 25 to 50 grams of carbs in that. And then, you know, for a half marathon, I'm probably aiming for, you know, like 4 to 5 gels. And on a very good day, that's under 100 minutes. And with marathon, it's a lot more. So I've got like gels and I've got chews and try to kind of like rotate through the textures so I can trick myself into eating more. So you get the idea. It's probably a lot more than what you're used to. And the resistance point is usually like, well, I have this tiny bit and I don't feel good. So just, it's a gradual process of teaching your body. So if you struggle to say, have a piece of toast or have some porridge before you go for a run, no problem. Like start with having like 100 mils of juice or something like that. And probably something like non-acidic that's going to sit pretty well, you know, like oftentimes probably a little bit easier, you know, like having some apple juice as opposed to, you know, like orange or citrus or something like that. And then like maybe you have that, then like a week later, maybe you start having that and, you know, like half a banana or, you know, like, and just slowly, slowly add in and your body will get used to it and be able to use it a lot better. And there is variance between it because some people store carbs in their, like, store glycogen a lot better than others. So if you're at a pretty low body weight, chances are you're storing a lot less glycogen in your muscles and you're probably going to need to fuel more than somebody who has better stores. And that's just going to vary person to person. Like, so for me, I would, even like in a shorter race, like a 5 to 10K, I probably don't need, like I would definitely eat beforehand and I probably have one gel while I'm out there, but I probably don't need heaps for something that's under an hour. But I definitely coach people who definitely need it during the hour. So it is something that you need to experiment, but it is the kind of thing where you also want to err on the side of more rather than less. And you always want to test it on workout days because it's very different having fueling when you're out for an easy run as opposed to when your intensity is a lot more. That's when it's going to be more of a challenge for your body to use those carbs and use that fuel. And the final thing that I thought I'd touch on today, which is another thing that I hear everywhere and from, you know, runners and non-runners and everyone, because it's so persistent, is this idea of the 10% rule, that you just add in 10%. I've heard every week. I've also heard like up to every 2 to 3 weeks. And people can look at it and go, man, that's really slow. Like if I start running at, say, 3 kilometres, and I'm only adding in 10% every week, you know, then the next week is going to be 3.3, then the next week is going to be 3.6, then the next week is going to be 4. So I'm taking nearly a month to go from 3 kilometres to 4 kilometres. So you can seem overly conservative. And in some cases it is. So what it's more about is most people have a set point. And that's going to depend on your training history and what you've been doing and all the rest of it. So for me, if I have a period when I'm not running, the set point that I can return to with no problems, don't really have to build up to it, don't have to worry about it at all, is probably like 50 to 60 kilometers a week. I can get up to that super fast, no dramas. But it's usually, once I've had like a break, like getting in between say 70 to 100 where I need to be more conservative, and that probably that 10% rule would probably be a bit more true in that period of time. So for most people that have like a kind of like a baseline that they're comfortable with, and even if you haven't run before, like maybe you're used to doing some kind of activity, you know, like a few times a week, so it's probably not that big of a deal to get to a situation where you're doing three runs of, you know, 30 minutes three times a week. But then building on top of that, that's when you need to be conservative. So, and generally the rule with, it came around from sort of like what causes injuries. But the reality is for somebody, you could increase their load by 50% and they're not going to get injured. And you could increase somebody else by 2% and they are going to get injured. So it really is dependent on their particular situation. But one thing to keep in mind is it works, swings both ways. So you want to look at usually a range of 20% over what you would normally do or 20% under what you would normally do. If you go on the lower side too, that's also a risk for injury, which is also what people don't realize. It's sort of like how, you know, like in sport, everyone gets injured in the preseason. And it's because, you know, like it's a combination of that decreased load and then adding things onto it, and it can kind of go like a little bit pear-shaped in that way. So you want to kind of like keep it to that sort of, I guess, like 80 to 120% kind of range. And to work that out, it's usually best to not look at like 1 week, but to look at the last 4 weeks. Because say, for example, you might run 50 kilometers a week for 3 weeks and then have a down week. That doesn't mean that you're going to like, oh, like I've got to build up really slowly now because I've had 1 week off. Doesn't work that way. So you want to take a look at it as a 4 week block, what's happened in the last 4 weeks, and keep it within like 20% less than that or 20% more than that as a guide. But you'll get a feel for your body and, you know, like what it likes and what it doesn't like and, you know, like what works well for you and all the rest of it. But don't get locked into this kind of this real sort of dogma around 10%, because it's not like a real thing and it's not like based on any actual evidence of any kind, and it can make it hard and laborious, like particularly when you are coming back into running after having a break, if you actually did what I've heard some people suggest, which is like 10% every 3 weeks. And it's like, my God, like if you have done nothing and then you are like getting up to, you know, like trying to get back up to sort of like 60 kilometers a week or whatever it is, you know, it would take you so many weeks and it's unnecessary. I think that most people know what that set point is for them. You know, like it's just that thing where it's really easy to get up to that level. It doesn't make you super fatigued. You don't get sort of like super niggly after it. Whereas like I found like particularly in between, say, when I'm sort of like in that 90 to 100, it's not that difficult to start getting some niggles and sort of some things pop up, and then you just, that's okay, you just dial it back and then you allow your body to settle at that new level. And one thing that is true is it usually does take about, you know, in the vicinity of 3 to 4 weeks for adaptations to happen. So, you know, if you are at your set point and you add a little bit and it's feeling like a little bit rough, then you just want to hang out there for about a month and then see how you go before you add anything else in. And that goes the same for if it is volume, like as in just adding in an easy run, or if it's intensity, because that's still a new training stimulus. So even if the total number of kilometers is the same, adding in a workout, it's going to sort of change the overall loading. Any questions for the podcast, you can just send them through, you can send them through message on Facebook or Instagram, or you can email me at zoe@opmove.com. That's Z-O-E-Y. And yeah, happy to chat about that next time. Also at the moment, there's still a free trial running on Run Club. So you can jump on that, give it a go, check out all of the training plans that are available, all the resources, get to know the community a bit and see if it's a good fit for you. And I will chat to you next time.